Okay, the session this time is developing in your children a heart for missions. You know the very familiar verses in Matthew 28:19-20. Go therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things. So how do we develop in our children a heart to obey this command? Well, it will affect our lifestyle if we're really serious about it. That means that we have to learn to live unselfishly and with contentment. That means that living the North American dream is not going to be what is foremost in our homes. The goal is not to just have a beautiful house and be able to sit back and take it easy and go on vacation when you want to. The goal is to know God better. That's the goal in life, to know God better and help others to know him too. And we have to be a living example of that to our children. So if you don't have money to travel, if you don't have money to buy a new dress, be content. And instead, you can pray that God would provide it if he wants you to have it. That is a wonderful way to just live it out in front of your children and have them pray too and let them see, did God want this? Was this what he wanted for us or was it not? I remember one time we traveled, we were in this traveling ministry and we were at a church in Arizona. And they said, oh, are you going to go to the Grand Canyon? And we said, yes, we are. And they said, be sure to go to see the IMAX film. And it was telling about how the Grand Canyon was discovered and that kind of thing. Well, what we didn't tell them was we didn't have money to do that. So we just didn't say anything. But the church decided that they were going to give a special gift to our family, and they wanted the children to be able to see that IMAX film, so they gave us the money for it. And that was just a very special thing for all of us. So, model this to the children. That might mean, like I said, being willing to buy things secondhand. And it's important for our children to learn that too. Living unselfishly includes being willing to let our children go. You know, they're gifts from God. They're not ours just to grasp and hold on to. Remember Psalm 127:4 says, like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. You know, no warrior would take his arrows and just stick them in the ground right next to his tent, would he? He shoots his arrows. You know, sometimes people have asked me, how can your mother heart stand having your children in such danger? We have our oldest daughter is a Bible translator in Nigeria, and she is in the area where there is a lot of fighting between Muslims and so-called Christians. Nominal Christians. There's a lot of killing that goes on. And we know that if we don't hear from her for weeks on end, that there's probably unrest and she's staying in the village and not coming into the city. When she comes to the city, that's when she can email us. And so we've learned that when we haven't heard from her for a long time, she's just what we call laying low so that she's safe. And But you know, God is such a wonderful father. He understands the yearning of a mother's heart. And you know, he comforted me very much in two ways. One way was when our son, who is a pilot, was in Afghanistan, and his job there was that he was supposed to fly around engineers after the war who were doing reconstruction. It wasn't safe for the engineers to travel by road. So his job was to fly them. Well, during that time, there was a verse in Psalm 68:20 that God gave to me, and this is what the verse was. Our God is the God of salvation, and to God the Lord belong escapes from death. And that was very comforting to me. It's like, thank you, Lord. You know, our son, of course, you know, we felt he was a lot safer because he was flying, but, you know, one day when he was flying, his one engine stopped. It was a twin-engine plane, fortunately. But that meant he had to make an emergency landing, and he had to make an emergency landing at a place he wasn't too happy about landing at. And when he went to land on the runway, you know, there were bombed-out cars beside the There were burned out cars sitting there by the runway, and it's like, this doesn't really look like the safest place to be. But God, again, just gave me that verse, and it was such a blessing to me. And then God used an armed robbery to comfort my heart, too. Now, that might sound funny, but our two oldest daughters were there in Africa, and they were in an armed robbery. They had stopped by the roadside to buy some fruit, and a vehicle pulled right in front of them, so it was impossible for them to move. And men got out of that truck with shooting guns and ordered them all out of the vehicle. I think there were six of them in that vehicle. Had them lie on the pavement, and then they just started throwing off the stuff on top of them, everything that was in their vehicle. Not everything, but some of the stuff, the building materials. And then they took off with the vehicle and the one missionary. And after they did later release the missionary. And then you might think, well, what's the comfort in that? The comfort in it was the email our daughter wrote to us after it was all over. The first email she wrote, she said, just cancel all my bank accounts and everything because my computer's been stolen and we've been in an armed robbery and I'll write more later. No one's hurt very bad. It's like, wow, what's going on? And then she wrote us a nice long email the next day. And I'm just going to read to you several paragraphs from that email so that you can understand how God used it to comfort my heart. And here we are, minus computers, cameras, tax stuff, all Diane's research for the past 3 years for her thesis, my recent backups, passports, plane tickets, money, clothing, and dozens of other things. As Renee said, highway robbery is very anticlimactic. It starts out exciting, but trying to pick up the pieces afterwards is a prolonged, boring nuisance. However, we're all alive and nobody was harmed, so who cares? Equipment can be replaced and work can be redone, but lives can never be gotten back. That's what really matters. The penalty for armed robbery is the same as the penalty for murder, so the thieves had nothing to gain and likely something to lose by sparing our lives. We thank God for his protection, and we thank you for praying for us, and we ask that you would always especially intercede for our safety on the highways. Now, this is the paragraph that especially blessed me. Nothing anywhere is safe, but we are in God's hands, and we are content. We don't trust him to keep us safe. We trust him to do what is best. And so we don't worry, not because we believe nothing nasty will happen, but because we believe that nothing will happen which in the light of eternity will not turn out to be amazingly, beautifully, spectacularly good. And that's the end of the quote. And God used that to comfort my heart. If we want to develop a heart for missions in our children, another thing that is very important is to be God's light wherever we are and teach our children to be his lights. You know the little song, this little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine everywhere I go. We like our children to sing that song. Teach them, first of all, to be his light right inside the four walls of your own house. You know, if you can't live it at home, you won't live it outside your home either. So teach your children to play together sweetly. Teach them to help you and each other willingly and with a good attitude. Teach them not to be picky eaters. We insist that our children, I should say we insisted, we don't need to do it anymore, we insisted that our children would take a small portion, even if it was something he didn't like. He at least had to eat a little bit. Don't allow them to eat something else instead. You know, if you fix the meal, then that's what's served. Don't allow your child to say, well, I don't like that. Okay, then you may have this. You are teaching them to be picky. You are going to make it very difficult for them on the mission field. Because on the mission field, you're going to need to eat food you don't like so that you don't offend people you are wanting to win to Christ. So make that easy for them. And then, of course, live it outside your home. Always be a good testimony for Jesus. So take your children with you when you go out because it provides ministry opportunities. You know, well-mannered, obedient children are a rare but powerful testimony. It's a wonderful way to testify for the Lord Jesus. Proverbs 20:11 says, "Even a child is known by his deeds, whether what he does is pure and right." Those children with you are a powerful testimony. So take them with you. Teach your children to play sweetly when they're playing with other children, even if those other children are cheating on the games. They still need to play in a way that honors the Lord Jesus. Teach them to eat foods other people fix, even if they don't like the food. So that's important for you to learn that in your own home first, so that they can learn that also when they're outside the home. I remember one time when we lived in New York City, a family invited us over for a meal, and she fixed cowfoot stew. Now, the stew itself was delicious. I actually got the recipe from her because I loved how she had it seasoned. The thing we didn't care for was the pieces of the gelatinous hoof that was in there. You know, just these hard chunks of gelatinous hoof in there. And so they had the children seated at one table and the adults at another. And so what my husband and I did, I mean, you just couldn't chew it. So we just cut it in small pieces and swallowed it whole. Well, I regretted after it was all over that I didn't think of going over to the children's table and telling our children that. I mean, they were like 7, 9, 12 at the time. And so afterwards, our one child, can't remember exactly how old he was, maybe 9, said, "That was terribly hard to eat, that cow foot." He said, "I swallowed my piece and it came back up, and I swallowed it again and it came back up, and I swallowed it again, and that time it stayed down." I felt terrible. It's like, oh dear. But anyway, he realized, you know what? I need to eat this. They served it to me, and I really want to eat it. He was really trying to honor them, and it was hard work, but he honored them. He got it down. So teach them to eat food others fix, even if they don't like it. Also teach your children to respond politely to people who speak to them. You know, don't make excuses for shyness. You've probably all heard that excuse. You know, you talk to a child and say hello, and they just go like that, and they won't even look at you, and the parents say, "Oh, well, he's shy." Oh, that's handy. I don't have to obey in that area. I can just be shy. Now, when a child is real little, that is different. They still have to learn the lesson, though. But, you know, a child is just automatically focused on himself. I mean, just look at a baby. "I want to nurse right now, and I'm going to cry till I get it. My diaper's dirty, or else I don't like being changed, and I'm going to cry to let you know I don't like it." I mean, they're just focused on themselves. Children are self-focused, so let's not help them be self-focused. And many times, it could just be stubbornness. Not always, but sometimes. We were at a church one time, and this family came in, and we had visited with this family before at other times when we were at the church, and they had a little boy who was probably about 7. Maybe 5. Anyway, he came in and I said hi to him and he just went like that. And his dad, bent down and told him, "I want you to shake Mrs. Wenger's hand." And he would not do it. So the father just looked at me and he said, "We'll take care of this." So, you know, I knew that was the end of it. He didn't make a scene. That was the end of it. So they went home that night, and I don't know what they did, but the next night they came back, and I was standing there, and he came up to me, and he said, "Our little boy has something to say to you." And that little boy held out his hand, and he said, "Hello, Mrs. Wenger." You see, they didn't let him get by with it. They didn't let him get by with it. And a lot of, we have had children who were naturally shy, very shy. But we never let them use it as an excuse. But you know what? We had to teach them how to deal with it. You know, it's like, it's very rude when someone wants to come shake your hand and say hello to you. It is rude to refuse to shake their hand and to refuse to look them straight in the eyes and say hello. In our culture, that's how you do it. Now, in some cultures, that would not be nice, but in this culture, it is. You shake hands, you look at them, and you say hello, and you have a nice smile on your face. And so we have had to help our children learn to do that, the ones that were shy. Because that is the way, that is a way to show the love of Jesus to other people. You know, remember, people are watching, even when we have no idea we're being watched. I mean, I know when we lived in New York City, a neighbor lady said to us one time, "Boy, that three-year-old of yours has a mind of her own, doesn't she?" We said, "Yes, she does." And basically, because she lived across the road, and we had a tiny little front yard, and the children basically didn't play in the front yard. They played in the backyard, which she couldn't see. She just saw us leaving, coming and going. And, you know, that was her comment. So it's like, wow, they watched us a lot. I remember one time we went to an air show. And when we got there, we stood in line to go in. And when we went to go in, the man said, "Okay, that will be, I don't even remember how many dollars." We had no idea you had to pay, because we had been at a similar air show several years before, and you didn't have to. So Ray opened his wallet, and we didn't even have money to pay for it. So Ray said, "Okay, we'll just leave." And so he turned around, and he said to the children, he said, "You know, it costs, I'll say $50. I don't remember if that's how much it was. It costs $50, and I don't have that much, so we're just going to have to go." So the children said, "Okay." So we turned around to go, and the man behind us in line stopped us. And he said, "I see how your children reacted when you told them that you couldn't stay. So I want to give you money so you can go." So we just turned right around and could go in after all. And you see, we had no idea that he was watching the reaction of the children. But it was just their normal reaction. But it was a sweet testimony to that man, and he wanted to bless it. And it was sweet for the children to see, too. You know what? You were being watched. You had no idea you were being watched. And yet you responded in a way that honored God. And that man wants to bless you now because of that. You see, what people see as they watch us is either going to glorify God's name or bring reproach to his name. Another thing to do if you want to cultivate in your child a heart for missions is to have a lifestyle of ministry. Begin when your children are young so that it just is a normal part of life to them. Now, that will vary from family to family. You know, what my family does will be different from what your family does, from what another family does. But do have some area of ministry that you can do together. Be aware of needs around you and have children help you fulfill those needs. You know, maybe you need to make a meal for a new mother or a sick neighbor. Don't be there in the kitchen trying to get it done all by yourself. Explain to your children what you're doing and have them in there helping you. Have them go with you when you deliver it and experience the joy that it brings to the other family. Or you could visit nursing homes, have your family sing, even if you can only sing in parts. Older people love seeing children. It's such a blessing and a delight to them. You can adopt some of those elderly people who have no family who visit them regularly. I don't know what it's like here in Canada, but I would think it's a lot like it is in the U.S. Many of those older people have no family that come to visit them. They don't care about them. They're lonely. So you can adopt some of those and visit them regularly, or visit lonely neighbors or shut-ins and help elderly neighbors or widows do things they can no longer do. Your family can go over there as a family and clean up their yard for them, or maybe clean their windows, do things like that. Another thing you can do is support a missionary. That doesn't have to be only financial. Maybe you aren't in a financial situation where you could actually support them financially. That's okay. There are other ways to support a missionary. Write letters. But when you write letters, assure them that you don't expect that they write back to you. It can be very encouraging to missionaries to get letters, but if they get a big, long list of letters they have to respond to, that can be overwhelming. So be willing to give without hearing back specifically. A lot of missionaries write a prayer letter, and so that can be your response from them. Read that prayer letter aloud together as a family and discuss the needs there and pray regularly for those. You can use money you would spend on Christmas gifts for each other and choose a missionary or a needy family to send it to instead. You know, there are valuable lessons gained as you are involved in ministry because it teaches priorities that are important, and it teaches perseverance, sacrifice, and flexibility. Now, there is practical training you can do too. And one of those is, don't allow your children to develop appetites for things which will lessen their hunger for God. And it's important for us as parents to be the example in this. One thing I think of in our day and age is all the electronic stuff at our fingertips. You know, we have computers, and we have internet. And granted, we get lots of wonderful information, and it's really handy. But you can overdo it. You know, and you can become almost addicted to information and just getting more and more information. Or computer games, you know, which is very addictive. Or watching YouTube videos and maybe even things that are worthwhile. But you know what? If you feed that appetite in your children, they are going to learn to just sit there being fed by that. And is it going to seem interesting to get out a Bible and study a passage? If you're constantly feeding yourself with this other, that the Word of God is going to get pretty dull. So be very careful that you aren't allowing your children to develop appetites which are going to decrease their hunger for God. And that means we as parents have to be very careful with that too. And be sure to teach your children practical skills. You know, learn to make things from scratch. Our daughter in Africa said that one of the biggest adjustments some of the missionaries have had over there is because they come to Africa and you can't just go to the store and buy grated coconut. You have to buy a whole coconut, you have to peel it and grate it yourself. That's just the way life is over there. And so to missionaries who have grown up in North America where you can just go buy everything and their parents haven't taught them how to do some of those things, it's just overwhelming. And they get very discouraged with being on the mission field. Life seems so heavy there because they don't know how to do it. So there's just so much to learn and it's just overwhelming. So learn to make substitutions when you're cooking, you know, and learn to cook things from scratch. Learn, teach your children, if you don't know how, learn it right along with them, how to do something like butcher a chicken. You know, when I grew up as a child, we butchered our own chickens. Well, after I got married, we did that a few times, but not very often. It was a lot handier too. And you know what? You can buy them already butchered. And so when we went over to Africa to visit our daughter, she said, well, you know, they just can't go to the store and buy meat. And she actually doesn't eat much meat because meat is very expensive. So one day she wanted to do something special, so she bought a chicken. Well, that meant the chicken had to be killed and cut apart and then roasted. And so I hadn't done it for years. You know, it's like, oh, wow, do I even remember how to do this? But fortunately, she had one of those Mennonite cookbooks, an Estershank cookbook, you know which one I mean? And it tells you in there exactly how to do it. So I opened the cookbook in front of me, and it's like, you know, as I did, it's like, oh, yeah, I remember. This is how you do it. This is how you do it. But I was so glad she did have that book there that prompted my memory. And, you know, it wasn't a big deal. But, you know, if you've never had the opportunity to do that at all, it can seem great big and overwhelming. Provide an adequate academic foundation. You know, many countries in nowadays require a high school education to live there and work. So if you wait till a child is grown and wants to go to the mission field, and then he finds out he has to finish his education, it complicates and delays the situation. So we homeschool our children through high school because we consider that the foundation. Then the foundation is in place for them to be ready to do whatever God calls them to. And if God doesn't call them to a foreign mission field, then they're ready to homeschool their own children. They have a great background and foundation for that. Have a conscious goal of developing mission-mindedness in your children. Don't let your children be squeamish about insects, spiders, and snakes. So you know what, moms? That might mean we have to retrain ourselves. I had to do that. You know, I had to do that in relation to snakes. My father hated snakes. The only kind of snake he wanted around was a dead snake. Didn't matter if it was non-poisonous. So that's how I grew up. Then I married a man who was very fascinated by non-poisonous snakes and enjoyed catching them and watching them and having them in a cage in the house so we could watch them. So guess what? I had a decision to make. Am I going to learn to see the beauty in these creatures God made, or am I going to say, I'm just not going to have anything to do with them? So I decided, okay, I'm just going to be his teammate. And another thing I hated was bugs and spiders and that kind of thing. I didn't want to touch them or do anything with them. And I decided that by the grace of God, I was not going to pass that on to our daughters. That meant that when they brought me a creepy crawly and were all excited about it, I had to be excited about it too. And I couldn't say, get that thing out of the house, don't let it touch me. I had to be excited about it. And one day, I remember, one of them had caught a bird, one of them had caught something else. I even forget what the things were, three things, and they were so thrilled, and they wanted to hold these things till their daddy came home and they could show him these special things they had caught. And they wanted me to help them catch a snake they had found. Oh, I didn't want to, but I didn't tell them that. I said, okay, I'll help you get it. Well, my husband would have just gotten a stick and gotten it behind the neck and picked it up. Well, I was not going to do that because I knew I'd get bitten. Even though it was a non-poisonous snake, I didn't want to be bitten. I wasn't good enough at it to do that. But I said, okay, we'll go get the aquarium. It was empty. It didn't have any water in it. And I set it on its side. And, you know, then we surrounded the snake, and with sticks we made him go in there. And then we put the lid on, and he was safe. And so there he was till they could show their daddy when he came home. But you know, when it was all said and done, I actually was shaking. The children didn't know it. When they grew up, I told them those things. They didn't know it. And you know, they don't have any of those problems I did. You know, if boys, not our boys, because we didn't allow this, but you know how boys like to scare girls with things. They never could succeed in doing it with our girls. It's like, make them scream because here's a spider or a big old beetle or a snake or something. When they'd want to scare them, our girls would say, oh, let me hold it. I want to see it. It's like, well, that just took the wind out of the boys' sails, you know. But so that is possible. And it is important, if they're going to go on the mission field, that they learn not to be intimidated and fearful of those kinds of things. Let them try missionary training experiments. I remember one time Ray went fishing with the children and they came back and they were filleting the fish and skinning them. And then one of the children said, you know what? I want to be a missionary. And I know that if I'm going to be a missionary, I'm going to have to eat things I don't like. So I think I better get some practice now. I think I'm going to try to eat this fish eye. And you know what I was thinking? A fish eye? Why eat a fish eye? And I figured, well, there's nothing wrong with eating a fish eye. Many cultures eat raw fish eyes. That's not going to hurt them. They can try eating a fish eye. They can get their missionary training. And he said, sure, that's fine. Eat it. So they chewed and chewed and chewed on. It was very rubbery. Finally, they just had to swallow it down. And, you know, years later, a younger child wanted to try that same thing. It's like, sure, go ahead and try it. You know, it's like, don't squelch that desire to learn lessons young, when there's nothing wrong with the lesson itself. There's nothing wrong with them eating a fish eye. Make your children aware of other cultures too. You know, you can read interesting missionary biographies together. There are lots of them. Reading those biographies will inspire your children to invest their lives in what really matters. We were in Canada one time, and we were with a family where the son he didn't have very good eyesight. He had to have really thick glasses and contacts. And his eyes were in such poor condition because he loved hockey, and he had had a hockey injury. But you know, he was really proud of that injury because he loved hockey. So it was like, it was something to be proud of, to have this injury, because sports meant that much to him. Well, that attitude would be admirable if it were for a good reason. You know, we want that same attitude to be developed in our children, but not because it's a passion for sports. We want that attitude to be developed that I am willing to do whatever God wants me to, even if that's going to bring me some personal injury, because I have a passion for souls. And if that means I'm going to get injured in helping other souls come to know the Lord, I'm willing for that. So let them do that through interesting biographies. I'm going to list a few quickly. Probably some of these you know. By Searching by Isabel Kuhn, Bruchko by Bruce Olson, Manuel by Hugh Stephen, In Search of the Source by Neil Anderson, His Voice Shakes the Wilderness by Sophie Muller, God at the Controls by Jean Dye Johnson, The Good Seed by Mariana Slocum, The Man Who Moved a Mountain by Richard David, Jungle Doctor Books by Paul White, and then he actually has, those are written probably on a junior level, and a lot of those are out of print, but some of them are coming back into print. They're really interesting stories. It's by a missionary doctor who wrote them, and children love them. Also, you can invite missionaries into your home. You can invite retired missionaries. We read an excellent book, a missionary story, The Sword and the Scalpel, by Bob Foster. His parents were strong, courageous Christians, but you know what? They worked at a remote outpost far from any medical help in Rhodesia. And their young son got sick, and because there was no medical help available, he was very severely handicapped. And that incident forged another brother's desire to become a doctor. And that book is a wonderful book to read. I have read few missionary stories that show the success in integrating the gospel with medical work like that book does. And you know, when we read that book, we realized, you know what? This couple retired in North Carolina, and they only live about an hour away from us. And so we called them. They didn't know us, and we didn't know them. And we said, we read your book. We would love if you could come for supper. Would you be willing to do that? They said, sure, we'd love to come. So we called. I mean, we made an appointment, and they came, and we had a wonderful time together. And it was so encouraging and inspiring to us and our children to hear about their work. And you know what? Even though they were in their 80s, they were still active for the Lord. It was really inspiring. Eileen Kuhn is another retired missionary. You know, you've probably read some of Isabel Kuhn's books. When she died, her husband John married a woman, Eileen. And we learned to know Eileen, and she's still living. She is a wonderful example. She's my model of how to grow old. She is such a beautiful testimony. And she calls herself an Omega midwife. She's retired now. She lives in a missionary retirement home. She calls herself an Omega midwife. In other words, our daughters, we have two daughters who are midwives. They help, you could call them an alpha midwife, because they help birth babies into the world. Eileen calls herself an Omega midwife. You know, Alpha and Omega. Alpha is the first Greek letter of the alphabet. Omega is the last Greek letter of the alphabet. She sits with people, you know, other retired missionaries there in the home who are dying. And she sits there with them, reads to them from the Word, sings to them as they go to meet the Lord. She calls herself an Omega midwife. Isn't that neat? She is a prayer warrior. She's a prayer warrior for people personally, and she also brings the needs of other people's to other people's attention and arranges prayer meetings to see that those needs are prayed for. She is so busy with ministering to others there in the retirement home that every time we are in Pennsylvania and we want to visit her, we have to call ahead and make an appointment, or she won't be there. And our daughters who were delivering babies there in Pennsylvania, not far from where she lives, they would go to visit her. They called her one week and said, you know, we'd really love to come see you. When would it suit you? She said, well, let me look at my schedule. Well, I have Saturday afternoon open. Could you come then? She is busy. Here she is in her 80s. She lives in pain. You would never know it. She doesn't complain. She has a smile on her face. She's praising the Lord, and she is busy still doing what she can for the Lord, even though she's going blind. A beautiful example. When missionaries are on furlough, invite them into your home. Find, before they come, find their country on a map. Learn about their country. And then when they come, don't just say, well, tell me about your country. But ask them specific questions. Well, what kind of foods do you eat in your country? What are the religious beliefs of people? Have any people come to know the Lord? Ask them questions. Also, help your children through all this to have a realistic view of missions. You know, we can hear missionaries talk, we can read these missionary stories, and it sounds very exciting. And so it's easy for people to get a romantic notion of missions. Oh, it's just a wonderful thing. And they don't realize the hard work involved. Success stories are very inspiring, but you know what? There is lots of hard work, and there are disappointments behind every single one of those success stories. So it's important to remember that when you're called to the mission field, God calls some to plant, another will water, and another is there for the harvest. Every single one of those stages is very, very important. But you might not be the one there for the harvest, and that's the one that feels most rewarding. That doesn't mean it's the most important. It isn't. Because if no one would plant and no one would water, there would be no one to get to be there for the harvest either. So each step is important, but our children have to understand that whatever task God calls us to, we do it with all our might, whether the harvest is there in our lifetime or whether it's not. You know, the Fulani people that our daughter is working with and translating the Bible for, missionaries have worked there for years, planting, watering, planting, watering. And it has been a very, very difficult field. It has seemed like Satan has really worked hard to keep there from having a harvest happen. And in fact, our daughter made the comment one time, you have to be really courageous to minister to those people. Many people have died there, have had to go home from the field, have died when they're ministering with them, have gotten cancer. Our daughter actually got cancer. And she had to come home for surgery. She's back on the field again. But it's a difficult field. But you know what? There is starting to be a harvest. And it's an exciting time to be there. But that does not mean that our daughter is doing a more important work than the previous missionaries did. You see, in God's eyes, every step was just as important as the next. We have to be faithful at the step that God called us to. So, in conclusion, I want to close with two verses that is a prayer of mine for our family. This is from Psalm 67, verses 1 and 2. God, be merciful to our family and bless us, and cause your face to shine upon us, that your way may be known on earth, your salvation among all nations.